So it's the day before New Year's Eve, and a few days before we begin the winter retreat. And one subject that comes naturally to mind on both those occasions is just the topic of Aditan, resolution. New Year's resolutions have a somewhat checkered and laughable history. But at the same time, if we reflect on what really shapes our lives, it's the adhitans we make. Whether, if your marriage, your ordination, the school, if you choose to go to college, these are all serious commitments, multi-years, and they shape our lives. And we can't avoid making them. So it's important to reflect on these topics. And I thought just to start more with the Buddha's perspective on the importance of action. I know I've read much of the discussion in Ajahn Jeff's book, Skill and Questions, and I found it, quite illuminating. According Ajahn Jeff's looks at the Pali Canon and explains that there are two teachings that the Buddha regarded as categorical, in other words, true across the board. And one of these is teachings on unskillful versus skillful action, that there is a distinction, and if you do unskillful actions, that will have negative results. Skillful actions will have positive results. And then the second categorical teaching is the Four Noble Truths, which is the more complicated of the two, but can lead to full awakening. But the realm of adhitana, resolution, is pretty much in the first category, regarding the first categorical truths, skillful and unskillful actions. And again, Ajahn Jeff notes that the Buddha placed great importance on the fact that actions have results. Our choices matter. Apparently, the Buddha usually didn't seek out debates, but there were a few teachers, I guess, he tracked down who asserted that actions had no consequences, and therefore you really didn't have to pay attention to the way you lived your life. Either life was what would happen to you was either determined by fate or by random chance. But either way, what you did didn't really count. And so, you don't have to think much about your actions. Just live. And the Buddha pointed out that, well, these were samanas teaching it, but they lived according to these, conventions of being a samana. But if they thought actions didn't have any results, why did they bother to live that way? I mean, there might be more pleasant ways to live. And in his own search, the Buddha never even discussed talking with those teachers, much less studying under them. So there's There's a number of different lists of skillful and unskillful action. One of the most basic is just the precepts. Everyone here recited the 8 precepts just tonight, which lay people take on for a day and a night on the lunar observance days, and residents of the monastery live under all the time. And the regular 5 lay precepts are a subset of those. Not to take the life of any living creature, not to take what is not given, not to engage in sexual misconduct, not to engage in false or harmful speech, the strict precept being on false speech, and not to take intoxicating drink or drugs, which prevent heedfulness. I think there's a sutta where the Buddha speaks about these precepts taking on these precepts is a gift to the world. When you undertake the precept not to take the life of any living being, then that is giving safety, freedom from fear to innumerable beings. And again, according to the way and that in turn has a result, and that is that one realizes some measure of that safety oneself. Similarly with the other 4 precepts. When we refrain from doing those things, we become trustworthy, and we don't cause harm to others, and our lives start to become ordered, praiseworthy. And there's a more refined list, or more extensive, which is the 10 kinds of wholesome and the 10 courses of skillful and unskillful kama. So the 10 are: the skillful version is to refrain from taking the life of any living creature, to refrain from taking what is not given, to refrain from sexual misconduct. These are the 3. These are the 3 bodily types of wholesome kama, wholesome action. The 4 verbal are to refrain from lying, to refrain from divisive speech, to refrain from harsh speech, to refrain from idle chatter. And then the 3 mental aspects are non-covetousness, non-ill will, and right view. So we can also contemplate these. And then again, the Buddha's emphasis was that in all cases, he asserted that unskillful action leads to long-term suffering and harm. Skillful action leads to long-term benefit and happiness. The short-term results are not as clear as the long-term ones. And my understanding is that's That's nearly a definition of what skillful and unskillful are, what results they lead to in the long term for ourselves and for others. Now, during a retreat like this, we have the opportunity to cultivate more subtle qualities of the mind. But still, you know, they can be split into wholesome and unwholesome. And so, for example, a list of the more subtle qualities is what are the qualities that the Buddha taught to his foster mother after she ordained as a bhikkhuni. So that list, he actually gave her this teaching about how to recognize what is and isn't Dhamma. So again, going with, as usual, the negative version comes first, and I'll go to the second positive version. Gotami, the qualities of which you may know, these qualities lead to dispassion, not to passion, to being unfettered, not to being fettered, to shedding, not to accumulating, to modesty, not to self-aggrandizement, to contentment, not to discontent, to seclusion, not to entanglement, to aroused energy and not to laziness, to being easy to support and not being difficult to support. These qualities you may know. Of these qualities you may know, this is the Dhamma, this is the Vinaya, this is the teacher's instruction. And so those eight qualities are much more subtle aspects of the mind than what one is working with on the level of precepts. But still, the difference between skillful and unskillful. So it's important to keep, when we're contemplating resolution, aditan, and what are skillful commitments and what are unskillful commitments, it's useful to keep these perspectives of cause and effect in mind. One thing that I notice about unskillful resolutions is that oftentimes what happens is people imagine what they want to be. And then they commit to being that in the future. But that doesn't really take into account cause and effect. There are some things that you can will yourself to be. You know, I will, you know, say what? I will, you know. It actually depends on one's skill. You can, for instance, the precepts are something you can commit to. But it's much more challenging for most people. Most people can't say, well, today I'm not going to have a thought of ill will. That's not how my mind works. So in order to make skillful resolutions, one has to understand the patterns of cause and effect in one's own living situation. And what you want to do is you want to find the places where a relatively small change in your actions, one that you can commit to and keep, will have a large change in outcome. This is, given that our lives and our minds are quite complicated nonlinear systems, it's possible to, it's possible to do this, but it takes attention, it takes skill. And what one doesn't want to do is try to commit to results that without having any concept as to how the results can be brought about. So just to give, to give an example, I've for many, many years I've had a habit of scratching pimples. But I've tried various times to stop that, but not much success. On the other hand, I notice that when I'm on retreat or other situations where my mindfulness is heightened, without even making any effort, it's like, I'm not doing that anymore. That's an example of a trailing, an effect rather than a cause. I'd be better off thinking, how can I be more mindful? How can I put in the causes to have a greater mindfulness, and then not scratching pimples will happen quite naturally. On the other hand, there are other causes that have much more effect. For instance, I have the capacity to get very absorbed in books. And so if I pick up a book, I can read it, especially, at the monastery, there's not so much to do. So sometimes I can pick up one book and it's like, okay, it's like 2.5 hours later I put that book down. And that's especially if one's on retreat, or that's a big chunk of time. And there was, that's a decision one wants to make. That's a decision one wants to make ahead of time. Or other things, like when I was a layperson, there were years where I was quite, basically addicted to particular video games. And I could see in the course of my paying attention to my mood and how things went, if I was playing video games as much as, for hours, I pretty much, it scuttled a lot of my life. I was much less happy those times when I wasn't. And the cause was always that way, there were causes in terms of why I would play video games, but that was, if I could keep myself from doing that, I'd usually find something better to do. And certainly that had a less negative impact on my mental states. So those are examples of causes, and recognizing the two is important. And then one has to investigate, what is it? How does one apply effort skillfully to this situation? And I could see, for instance, with the video games, I could see that, I could see that it was really having, really taking my, just taking my mind in directions I didn't want it to go. And I can remember one year, I can remember there was a year where I, resolved, not to play video games alone that year. I put that caveat in because there were basically one friend who I rarely saw, but who would definitely want to play video games with me. And that was okay. This seemed quite different. And I think I was able to keep that for about somewhere between two and four months. I can't remember exactly. It was helpful, but that was a biggie, and I did end up breaking that after 2 or 4 months. Reflecting on it later, what I realized is that for something like that, you actually want to put in some more consequences. I might have, what would have been helpful, I think, is if I had found a friend, and there were a couple of possibilities, and I just didn't think of this at the time. And just every time, you know, I say I call said friend every 2 weeks or so just to chat, and then I just mention, oh yeah, I didn't play any video games this 2 weeks. And then, you know, after have the momentum there for a while, and then, you know, do I really want to admit that I, you know, that I slipped on that, you know, or make it that I, and also the other thing is just to be able to, if the friend was supportive, to be able to call and say, look, you know, I'm merely in a bad mood. I'm, you know, awfully close to playing video games, but, you know, I'd be better to call you instead. So that's skillful, and that's often what we need to do if we want to abandon something like that. There was a story in a book that I read where someone, you know, quitting smoking is really, really tough. And I mean, one thing is first to understand, you have to actually really see the drawbacks of what you're doing, and actually get a good chunk of your mind behind what you want, you know, what you actually, the benefits of either not playing video games or not smoking or not picking up random books to read. You have to understand, you know, yeah, I get quite a bit of the mind behind it. But then this particular person, I mean, smoking is really hard from what I hear. I've never smoked. But he said, I really want to do this. And, you know, you can think, well, you know, I'd like to see my grandkids through, you know, another 7 years or however much longer it is that one lives not smoking. And I guess, and again, one story about just the importance of understanding the consequences that relates to smoking was that my grandmother was a smoker, and she must have smoked at least 4 decades. And I remember we kids would always, you know, we'd hide her cigarettes and do other things to her, because we didn't think smoking was a good idea. And I think she appreciated our efforts, but she didn't stop smoking. But what happened was, then 1 year, Grandma wasn't smoking. And like, oh, wow, what happened? And we asked our parents later, and apparently, well, the story had always been that Grandma was okay with dying early because she didn't want to be a burden to others. But she had bad circulation in her legs, and it was getting worse. And then I guess her doctor told her, look, if you don't stop smoking, we're going to have to amputate your legs in a couple of years. And she didn't want to be a burden to other people. And so imagining herself with amputated leg was totally unacceptable. So she figured out what she needed to do to quit smoking. So that's an example of how, yeah, you understand the consequences and you have a lot of motivation. But then the other story, the author of this book, The Pathfinder, he was also hooked on cigarettes, but he did to set up consequences for himself. He wanted to quit. So he wrote out a $1,000 check to the re-election campaign of a senator he did not like at all. And he sent the check to one of his friends who he trusted, and basically, you know, he couldn't fake out and said, okay, you call me up every week and, you know, and ask me if I've smoked, And if I start smoking, you send that check off to the senator. And so that worked. He was willing to go that far. You know, that's so this is examples of the kind of skill that it can take if you really want. And I mean, yeah, you know, smoking is really harmful. And it could be worth that. Most of the time, you know, we're dealing with much more subtle things. And so, you know, you don't need to use big consequences like that. In fact, it'd be inappropriate. But it is helpful to, you know, it is helpful to have a bag of tricks. And so one thing is like at the monastery, you know, after we've lived here a while, you know, many of us realize that we can do without breakfast, okay, but breakfast is still nice. So oftentimes I'll just, you know, if I want to change something, I'll use breakfast as a way. Okay, well, if I break this one day, that's okay, but I just won't eat breakfast the next day. Then I can, you know, that just gets the mindfulness going. That's what I end up doing with that example of reading. I recognized, it's not that it's a problem with reading, but you want to make a choice. You know, does this seem to be worth looking at? Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. So to force myself to make that choice, I just said, well, okay, I can read, but I'm not going to open that book until I walk out of the room with it. So I have to actually move somewhere in order to read it. And if I forget, and it's an easy thing to forget, then I'll just skip breakfast the next day. And that particular time, that ended up working. And, you know, now I'm better at, you know, not reading random books. Even though I've set down those consequences now. Another example of sort of a, you know, just fun one to play with in terms of watching, you know, watching desire is that, you know, sometimes I would notice like having lots of desire around the food line, which is totally common. But, you know, one thing that I worked with was, okay, look at the food, you know, look at the food on the food table. It was okay. What's the most desirable thing out there? Be really honest, and then just not take it. So whatever the one most desirable thing out there is the one thing I won't take. And at least the way the food is at a Bayagiri, this is... be in absolutely no danger of starving. That's guaranteed. But you can watch. And, you know, that's a curious one. There's also the ascetic practices, the dutangas, which we can take on from time to time, which are useful for enlivening practice, shaking off defilements. You know, it's important to take these on for the proper reasons. I think it may actually be a dukkha to take them on if you want, you know, if your motivation is to impress other people or get special favors because so-and-so practices so-and-such a dutanga. But there's actually quite a few people practicing, you know, various dutangas in the community, and if you're curious, you can ask them about what the benefits are. I've done a few from time to time. You know, I've Dokbot, walking, eating only what one gets on alms round, is a practice I've taken on from time to time. And I can remember when I first tried, and not eating breakfast, so just everything that day. I remember when I first started this practice, I was, you know, that would sort of start obsessing my mind from the day before. I'd think, well, I better eat a whole lot today because I'm going to eat tok, because I don't know what I'm eating tomorrow. It'll be tokbot. And, and I just got to watch that. But then as the weeks went on, it became just more normal and less obsessive. So even if I went an alms round where I didn't know if I'd get any food, I wouldn't be thinking about, when I get out of the van, I wouldn't be thinking about, oh, am I going to get any food or not? It was just like, well, I mean, my mind just thought about the other things it usually thinks about, which, aren't altogether, usually often not altogether skillful either. But it was just interesting to watch how that one particular, how consistent practice of one of the Dutangas lessened one particular craving or obsession. And that's what they're designed for. That's what they've been doing for a long time. Another trap that can happen in making commitments is that, you make a commitment in one situation for one amount of time, and I do recommend putting time limits on, most of the small commitments that one makes. It really renew, and then, in fact, almost everything you want to review in not too much time, because who knows if it's going to come out the way you expected it to. And it's much better to, it's more helpful to be able to keep a commitment for, say, 3 days and then realize, well, I committed to do that for 3 days, but after all, it wasn't a good idea after all. But I still made it 3 days. Okay. That can be more skillful than trying to do that same thing for 3 months and then after 3 days realizing this isn't working at all. I'd better quit. I mean, that's okay too. You sometimes make that mistake. But one thing is that if you have made a commitment for, say, 2 weeks and you find it helpful, and it produces good mind states, then say some months later, one can think, well, those were good mind states. I'll make that commitment and get the same mind states. Now, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You have to watch the other conditions. For instance, during my solo retreat, I decided to basically after waking up, I do 10 minutes of walking meditation outside, and before going to bed, I do 10 minutes of walking meditation outside. This is actually quite helpful. And it wasn't just getting up and actually getting things moving instead of just getting up and sitting. And then about a week ago, we were coming towards the, as we were coming towards the retreat, I said, well, I'd like to be more diligent. Why don't I try the same thing? So I made the same commitment. But I didn't pay enough attention to the differences. It's a lot colder outside now. And it's not that the cold itself is a problem. It's that I don't like cold. That's a problem. And I especially don't like cold right when I'm just waking up. And the other thing that I didn't realize was that, or didn't fully recognize, is that those were two weeks of solo retreat. Not much was going on. My mind state was much more in my control. Whereas, we still have work periods. We still have, meetings and people calling and issues coming up. And I don't always deal with those issues as skillfully as I'd like to. And, external things can really tip one's mind state around. And so, yeah, it's for the, for those two reasons, I ended up, you know, for at least 2 days in the past week. Some days I went out and walked, but at least 2 days I missed. And one of the things that one notices about the mind is that it's actually pretty frustrating, because if you've made a commitment to, okay, the next thing I'm going to do is to, you know, get up and do my stretches and then go outside and walk, you know, you think, well, I'm just going to sleep. That's what I'll do. Whereas if the commitment is to something, whereas if you're committed to something that seems, you know, not as bad, just get up, do my stretches, do sitting meditation and some chanting, you're actually more likely to, you know, I find myself that I'm more likely to actually get up and just sit. So that's, I mean, at least that's how I find my mind. It's frustrating, but it means that, you know, it shouldn't be that way, but that's actually not a very helpful way to think about it. It's just, okay, this is the mind that I've got. You know, maybe someday I'll train it so it's different, but right now it's like this. And so overshooting commitments not only means that you might not, you know, at least I might not keep commitments, it might mean that I actually behave less skillfully than if they weren't in place. So, I know, it's a useful warning. But I guess just reflecting on this, these are just some examples and reflections about how making and keeping commitments is a real skill. I've learned a great deal from it over the decades, and I still have a lot more to learn. But it can't, you know, but like learning any skill, there can be, you know, one can engage the mind with it. One other commitment that I found useful as a layperson was just to, I think it was about 2 years before coming here, I kept the Uposatha lunar days. And I kept them in, I was pretty strict. I wasn't eating, you know, I wasn't going to eat dinner or afternoon. So my research group, my research group usually ate lunch together. And so if that lunch, I would have to make sure to either, they were going to eat early enough or I'd eat earlier than they did. And then occasionally we would have dinners. And I remember one dinner where I said, John, I can't come to that dinner because I'm not eating dinner that day. And he said, well, you can come. You know, and he said, well, come anyway, just have tea. So that's what happened. And I was just, okay. And that's one of the things where a commitment really has teeth, really helps, is that, you know, if you make a commitment and then keep it, and then it's not, even if it's not pleasant, I mean, do the practice, watch the mind, was the way I put this to myself a while back. The idea that, okay, there are these conditions. I've got, you know, I'm at a research group dinner and I'm just drinking tea. And it's not going to be pleasant. And it doesn't have to be. I can learn something from this. That's where That's where learning can happen. So tonight we have the opportunity to stay up late if we want, which is, it's one opportunity for commitment. On the other hand, you know, we'll also be staying up late tomorrow night. So, and we're settling into the retreat, so it, you know, it may or may not be a good night to commit to staying up late. But this is exactly part of the skills that we're developing. So I offer this for your reflection.